The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome back to Feminist Book Club, the podcast. We're not just about feminist books. We are here for social justice, literature, and media in all its forms. But we do that through an intersectional feminist lens. Thanks for being here. Let's get started.
Hello, my delightful condensed balls of interstellar matter. Today, I want to talk to you about why science fiction is allegedly terrible and why I think it's one of the most important genres we can read in a world that feels uncertain. This episode is 100% inspired by my childhood generally and my recent interview with Flash Forward author Rose Eveleth, and I highly recommend listening to that episode if you haven't yet. About 9 months ago, I moved from Florida to Georgia during the middle of the pandemic. I was chasing a job opportunity doing something that I think is really meaningful and fills my cup in a lot of ways. But I had to uproot my partner, my kids, and myself from a community that had taken me many, many years to build. While I moved, I was also enrolled in graduate school, taking classes, go nights, and doing my side hustle thing at Feminist Book Club. What's up, Renee? Listener, I straight up stopped reading for a solid 3 months. Every time I went to pick up a book, I would get distracted or couldn't focus and would throw it down in disgust. Reading has been my go-to form of escapism for a while. I grew up without a lot of things that we take for granted. Cable television, out of nowhere. Lots of board games, who was I going to play with? The ability to go to movies, not at all. My mother didn't trust a lot of American entertainment options after a misunderstanding about what Chucky was originally about. It's a great story to tell, and one day we'll definitely get into it. Anyway, my options to not die of actual boredom fell between being outside in Florida with all those bugs in that heat, couldn't be me, or reading. So being inclined to air conditioning, I picked reading. I quickly realized that I didn't like lots of books targeted towards kids. Informational books, think biographies, or those event-specific books, the precursors to the Who Am I and What Was series of books today, didn't hold my interest. Mysteries were big, but I could never care long enough to get to the big reveal. And having a mother who worked really hard but didn't have a lot of money, I had to make do with what was available at the church garage sales. Nobody needs that many books about Precious Moments figurines, I'd like you to know, or in the deeply discounted bins at community garage sales. The first book I remember reading that swept me off my feet was Level 7 by Mordecai Rochwald. I want to be very clear here that I did not understand the nuance of the political discussion happening in the book. I was like 10, maybe 9 or 8. It doesn't really matter. But anyways, I was young when I read it for the first time, and we had just finished talking about World War II in school. The 50-cent synopsis is that it's a diary of a, quote, modern soldier living in an underground military complex. A nuclear war happens, and shit gets really bad, but as the story plays out, I remember thinking, holy crap, this is friggin' amazing. Am I in this book? Am I this person? Am I the button pusher? My love for science fiction was born in that moment, and it hasn't waned. I then fell in love with Jules Verne and spent an entire summer aboard the Nautilus and then descended through a volcano to the center of the Earth and then got on a rocket to the moon. My brother was a huge reader as well, and as I quickly gobbled up the books I got for me, I picked up his high fantasy novels like The Wheel of Time by Robert Jordan and Orson Scott Card, pre our understanding of what shitty values the dude espouses. I've had teachers tell me that science fiction is not a real genre, or that it's not, quote, serious enough to be considered literature in the Shakespeare sense of the word. In 2017, there was a study that came to the conclusion that if study participants identified a text as science fiction or fantasy, then they automatically assumed it was less worthwhile and devoted less effort to reading it and comprehending the material. Or, as articles sensationalized it at the time, reading science fiction makes you stupid. 2 years later, the same study authors amended their findings to say that JK, only poorly written science fiction makes you dumb. But in any event, as we all know through these 24-hour news cycles, typically it's the first announcement that makes the headlines. Nobody really keeps up with the retractions. This belief that science fiction is not worthy of reading means that less kids are exposed to it in school, if they are at all, and that public libraries find their collections of sci-fi and fantasy books shrinking in the face of general fiction, romance, or other genres that people are more comfortable with. But do you want to know a secret? Science fiction and fantasy novels are so, so good for everyone. Sci-fi and fantasy books have been ways for people to deftly talk about present-day societies or groups of people with a distance that allows for thoughtful discussion about what is good or bad about that system. Reading level 7 again as an adult, with the historical context and knowledge stuffed into my brain, allowed me to understand that the author was showing that when nations devoted all of their time, money, and effort to building nuclear armaments and saw those nuclear armaments as a solution to all of their problems, we all lose. And in the end, the only thing left of humanity are bones and bunkers. Books like Kindred by Octavia Butler use fantasy elements to show a mirror to us in present day and remind us that the scars of enslavement and the way people treat each other are still with us today and should be acknowledged before they can be healed. So let's talk about some more concrete ways in which sci-fi and fantasy books are just amazing AF. Science fiction proper has driven technological advancement. The developers behind Google Earth, which is a system that I use for work on the daily, and that I feel like a lot of people use during the pandemic as a way to leave their homes, if only for a little bit, was the developers gave credit to Neal Stephenson's 1992 novel Snow Crash as inspiration for their technology. Jules Verne's 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea inspired the first successful open water submarine in 1898. The word robot comes from a Czech novel, Rossum's Universal Robots, and didn't exist in English language before that time. For Pete's sake, Mary Shelley, who I agree with a lot of people, should be credited for creating the science fiction genre as a whole, and her idea of reanimating the dead with electricity can be found today in the defibrillator. Mexican physicist Miguel Alcubierre, I'm pretty sure I pronounced that incorrectly, created a design for faster-than-light propelled spaceship inspired by Star Trek. I could literally go on for a long time about this, but suffice it to say that science fiction and fantasy novels can spark an idea that can turn into real-life technology. And if you think that it's just hard science fiction that does this, I would also point that magic and fantasy novels do this as well. The idea of Wolverine's rapidly healing skin has led to medical advancements and medical treatments for burn victims. I mean, where the idea comes from doesn't really matter as long as we're all using it, right? My next point is that science fiction and fantasy force us to ask ourselves the deep questions. Who are we? Why do we have the values that we do? How can those values diminish us as a society? How can those values benefit society? What does it mean to even be human? These questions are asked again and again in science fiction books. N.K. Jemisin's Broken Earth trilogy urges us to think about power in fundamental ways, and not just raw planetary power of the Earth and its geological forces, but also about the power that people wield over each other, over those more marginalized, over those they exploit. What does a world look like when those tectonic plates, both physical and metaphorical, smash into each other? I'll never stop raving about it, but The Left Hand of Darkness by Ursula K. Le Guin, written during the second wave of feminism, asks us to consider all of the ways in which our society's gender binary influences the society at large and shows a world where it's the opposite, but no less rich and deeply moving. Lagoon by Nnedi Okorafor asks us to consider, in a universe where change is the only constant, how will humans, with their traditions and their roots and their desire to subjugate everything around them to conform to them, adapt? You think you're just reading about robots and princesses? That's too basic, babe. Reading these books makes you ask questions of yourself that you didn't even think to ask. Science fiction and fantasy shows us different paths available to us. And this is the fundamental ask of science fiction and fantasy, I think, the what if. The what ifs can be incredibly broad and large, like what if we keep on relying on fossil fuels and throw ourselves into a climatological calamity? Well, pick up Parable of the Sower by Octavia Butler or the Mad Adam trilogy by Margaret Atwood. What if we continue the restriction of historically marginalized communities without any checks and balances in the way? You can read The Unkindness of Ghosts by River Solomon or Midnight Rover by Niall Hopkinson to talk about that. What if we're balancing on a knife's edge and need to know how to recognize those voices we should be listening to lead us to a utopia? Woman on the Edge of Time by Marge Piercy talks about that, and so does The Lathe of Heaven by Ursula K. Le Guin. And I'd also like to add in The Giver by Lois Lowry to that particular prompt, because I think it's one of the only sci-fi and fantasy books that we read in schools. At least I know it's one that I read in school. What if you could travel to another dimension? Or what if the multiverse really does exist? A Wrinkle in Time has you covered, though you may not like what you find. Pivot Point by Casey West also thinks about parallel worlds and how the grass isn't always greener on the other side, but more where you water it. The what ifs can also be incredibly niche, like what if there's a nuclear war in the United States, but you were in Florida when it happens, and now you're stuck there. Alas, Babylon has you covered. To me, the consummate curious Kathy, science fiction and fantasy's biggest draw is that I can take my anxious tendencies to worry about the future and the world around me and satisfy it with the world that someone has already created for me. Are all of my questions answered? No. Are all of the answers that I get satisfactory? To quote my favorite meme lately, sometimes maybe good, sometimes maybe shit. But does it give me a foundation to start from? Does it help me think about how I wanna move in this world? Does it help me think about how I even wanna raise my kids? Yes, yes, a million times yes. So my darling little containers of the cosmos, I urge you not to snub sci-fi and fantasy books as nothing but cotton candy novels or books that nerds read in their mom's basement in the, under the cover of darkness. I want you to think about science fiction and fantasy books as quite possibly some of the greatest tools we have available to us as human beings to really examine ourselves, our world, and our impact. That's my segment for today. As always, if you want to follow me, you can on Instagram at Stitchcraft and Wizardry, or on Twitter at Nat Sandpaul. Let me know your favorite science fiction and fantasy books. I'm always looking for new ones to read. Talk to you soon.
Welcome back, everyone. Renee here. I have to start today's episode by saying thank you. Thank you to everyone who joined us this weekend for our second ever readathon. We had so much fun. We gave away dozens of books. I think we had like 75 winners or something. It was incredible. We will do it again. So if you missed out this weekend, just keep an eye on our social media. Listen here. We'll let you know when the next one is. I have to say a huge thank you to my team, to our volunteers, to everyone who pitched in to organize and host parts of this readathon. I could not have done it without you, truly. So thank you so, so much. I also have to say thanks to everyone who joined us for the grand opening this weekend. As you might know, we moved into our own space in April of this year and have been spending the last couple of months getting organized, painting, you know, trying to run a business and get a space up to our desired standards at the same time is really hard and time consuming. So we finally were able to do a grand opening celebration this weekend. I have to say thank you to Homebody MN Candles, sold some of their candles over the weekend. I have to say a huge thank you and shout out to Shawnee, the founder of Flava Cafe. If you're in Minneapolis or St. Paul, you have to keep your eye on Flava Cafe. They will be opening this fall, but the coffee is so, so good. They supplied the coffee for us. Also have to shout out Sift, who did our gluten-free treats. Got to shout out Isidore Nut Company, who supplied cute little packs of gourmet roasted nuts. Have to say thank you to my friend Amy Allison. Amy, thank you so much. She made I think something like 75 hand pies for the weekend, and there were a few left over. I just had one for breakfast. They are fantastic, and she did that out of the goodness of her heart. It was truly a community effort to bring this all together, and so I have to say thank you to everyone, and also shout out to Amanda, who ran our Shop Our Shelves booth. She was our cashier for the weekend. So thank you to everyone who celebrated with us, who joined us, who hung out, who spent time in our space. It was so wonderful to see just people in our space hanging out and creating community and meeting one another. It was absolutely lovely and everything I hoped and dreamed for this company. So thank you. We will be doing more in-person events at our space in the future. I'm keeping an eye on COVID numbers. I know we're going through another spike, so I'm not comfortable doing regular events in the space quite yet, but if you are in the Twin Cities, again, make sure you keep an eye on our social media, listen here, make sure you're on our email list, and we will keep you posted when and if we do in-person events at our space. So I promised you by the title of this episode that I would reveal our August boxes today. So I am so, so excited about this box. It's one of my favorites. The theme is beach reads. So everything is beachy, summery, fun, ocean delightfulness. So our book of the month is Dial A for Aunties by Jessie Q. Sutanto. And I'm going to read you the description because I haven't read it yet, but I've heard nothing but glowing reviews of this. Everybody says it's funny, it's laugh out loud funny, it's sweet, it's fun, and it's a quick, easy, fun, happy, feel good read. So this is what the description is. A hilariously quirky novel that is equal parts murder mystery, rom-com, and a celebration of mothers and daughters, as well as a deep dive into Chinese Indonesian culture by debut author Jessie Q. Sutanto. One accidental murder, 2,000 wedding guests, 3 maybe cursed generations, and 4 meddling Asian aunties to the rescue. When Madeline Chan ends up accidentally killing her blind date, her meddlesome mother calls her even more meddlesome aunties to help get rid of the body. Unfortunately, a dead body proves to be a lot more challenging to dispose of than one might anticipate, especially when it is accidentally shipped in a cake cooler to the over-the-top billionaire wedding Medi, her ma, and her aunties are working at an island resort on the California coastline. It's the biggest job yet for their family wedding business. Don't leave your big day to chance, leave it to the Chans. And nothing, not even an unsavory corpse, will get in the way of her auntie's perfect buttercream cake flowers. But things go from inconvenient to downright torturous when Medi's great college love and biggest heartbreak makes a surprise appearance amid the wedding chaos. Is it possible to escape murder charges, charm the ex back into her life, and pull off a stunning wedding all in one weekend? Well, I guess we have to read to find out. So that is Dial A for Aunties by Jessie Q. Sutanto. That is our book of the month for August. And now we have 5 products that we are featuring in our August boxes. The first, I've already mentioned them, Homebody MN Candles. So I have been chatting with Homebody for a couple of months, several months. So the candle maker is actually one of the booksellers at our favorite bookstore, Irreverent Bookworm in South Minneapolis. And we've been trying to find the best time to work together and the best way to work together. So we are featuring one of their full-size candles in the scent Books on the Beach, because it's perfect, which is a coconut milk and mango scent. I'm telling you, our studio smells so good right now because we have, you know, several hundred of these stacked up and they are so tasty smelling. It's the perfect summer scent. These are 8.5 ounces, full size. They retail for $24 and they are just, you know, the perfect clean soy candle burn, and I am obsessed with them. Homebody MN is a small trans-owned business hand-making candles out of their home in Minneapolis, and all of their candles are 100% soy, and they donate 5% of their profits. The current recipient for their donation is the Family Tree Clinic, which is an incredible sexual health clinic providing everything from affirming hormone therapy to HIV and STI testing. So yeah, you could say, and I would say, that they are the most badass candle company around. So that is kind of the star of the August box. And The next product, you know, we love a good snacky snack to snack on when we're reading. And we're so excited that Watermelon Road has shared their fruit jerky with us. So these are dried fruit snacks and they come in the tastiest flavors. So we've got pineapple mojito, mango margarita, and apple pie. And honestly, I think that all those three sound like the setup to the most delicious summer barbecue. Watermelon Road is a, of course, woman-owned snack company in Illinois, and I can't get enough of the mango margarita. There's like a little zingy kick to it, but the other flavors are just as good. And like I said, you can't beat a book and a snack. The next product in our August boxes are the Boss Dotti Sun Catchers. I love this company so much, and these sun catchers are so beautiful. They are decals that can be affixed to any window, and they cast just the most lovely rainbow in your room. Boss Dotti is a stationery company founded by Teresa, but named for her badass grandma Dorothy. And that's the kind of energy that I'm here for, like badass grannies, Boss Dotti. So all of our box subscribers are going to receive one of their four designs of decal sun catchers. And these are like perfect for your office window, kitchen window. I love sun catchers in the kitchen. I think that's where I'm going to put mine. And all of the designs are absolutely gorgeous. You're going to love them. The next product in our August boxes are Moonlight Makers Can Koozies. I cannot stop giggling about these. Like every time I see them, I just laugh my ass off. So these can koozies have a shark with a metal detector and it says, "Beach better have my money." The pun is glorious. I am such a sucker for puns and also a sucker for like Rihanna references. So when I saw these, I knew we had to have them in our August boxes. The koozies are perfect for keeping your fizzy water or your beer cold while you're by the beach, while you're at the park, while you're by the pool. And Moonlight Makers is really like the coolest company. Started by besties Nicole and Claire in an old renovated bus in Asheville, North Carolina. They screen print all of their designs by hand. They're hilarious, smart, a little punny. You know that's our favorite combo. And all of our August box subscribers are going to receive a Moonlight Makers Beach Better Have My Money can koozie. I can't get enough of it. And finally, we've got a bonus fifth item in our boxes this month. We've got squid ink pens, and vegans, they are not actual squid ink. Do not worry. These are just really nice pens provided by 826 MSP. Now, they are our real life neighbors in Minneapolis. This incredible organization is an ocean themed writing center that works with underserved youth in the Twin Cities. And like true oceanographers, the kids at 826 MSP dive deep into storytelling to explore new worlds with the guidance of actual professional authors and other writing professionals. We're obsessed with them. We are so excited to support their work by including these fun pens in our August boxes. And again, no actual squids were harmed in the making of these pens. So that is the squid ink pens from 826 MSP. As you know, we do donate 5% of all of our sales to different social justice organizations every month. And this month, I felt it was important for us to support an organization that is working to fight voter suppression. And I do believe the youth is the future. Gen Z is crushing it. And so our organization of the month is Students Against Voter Suppression. They're a youth-led nationwide movement dedicated to expanding voting rights by uplifting BIPOC and the working class while making progressive action more accessible through digital youth mobilization. Again, this is youth-led, youth-founded. They are campaigning and organizing in 14 states and Washington, D.C. They use educational voter outreach to encourage voting and promote legislation that reaffirms the right to vote. These kids are doing the best work. They are going to save this country. They're going to save democracy. And I am so proud of them and really proud to support them this month. So that's Students Against Voter Suppression, or SAVS. And you can go to savsusa.org to learn more about them. 5% of our sales will go to them this month. So if that sounds good to you, we would love to have you. Head over to feministbookclub.com/join or click the join button at the top and make sure you do that before August 9th. If you've already read Dial A for Aunties, we have extra copies of other books. Some of our runners-up included Arsenic and Adobo, Malibu Rising, The Other Black Girl, One Last Stop. We've got previous books of the month that you can swap in for, you can add on, because we want you to receive a box that you're excited about, receive a book that you're excited about. So we offer that opportunity. It's something that a lot of other book subscriptions don't do, and that's being able to swap the book for something that you're really excited about. So you would get instructions on how to swap once you sign up, but trust me, there are tons of titles for you to check out. I think at least 30 other titles. So again, head over to feministbookclub.com. Click the join at the top, you'll find the membership options ranging from $12 to $49. And if you have any questions, feel free to reach out on Instagram, on Twitter, via email. You can email us directly, hello@feministbookclub.com. And we hope that you join the club. Take care.
Hi, friends. Hope you guys are doing well and having a good day wherever you are. Emma Ito here, pronounced she, her, hers. And I am here to hype up a book. And I know I'm often here to hype up books, but I promise you that this book is absolutely worth the hype. So today, I just want to talk to you guys real briefly about a book I absolutely inhaled last month. And this book is Ace of Spades by Farida Abike Imide. You guys, I gotta say, I was totally blown away by this one. This was her debut novel, and basically what this book is advertised and pitched as is Gossip Girl meets Get Out, but honestly, like, I can't even do it justice because it's so much more than that, and there's so much to unpack in this book as well. So this is a dark academia YA thriller that centers queer Black characters, and our main characters are Chiamaka and Devon. They are attending a prestigious private academy known as Nivius, and they are about to hit their senior year. They're selected as senior prefects, and they're feeling really good about their senior year. They're thinking that they're going to go off to really great colleges, and they're very excited to start this year off as prefects. And then right after the announcement is made for them to be prefects, this person named Aces starts sending anonymous text messages revealing very, very spicy secrets about the two of them. And it completely turns their life upside down and threatens every piece of their future, especially going into colleges. And basically, as Aces continue sending out text messages on top of not just about these two, but about a couple of other folks, it seemed at first like maybe it was a little pranky, but then as the book flap says, it turns into a dangerous game with all the cards stacked against them. I cannot hype this book up more because okay, a couple things. One thing that I really appreciated and thought was really incredible about this book is that this is a YA book, and it still takes a really deep dive into the intersections between race, class, and gender and sexuality, with focus on homophobia and racism, and specifically anti-Blackness. Farida just does such an incredible job of really looping you in to this book. So I read this right as the new season of Netflix's Elite dropped. So if anyone's seen that, it's like a very, very rich students at like a very prestigious school. So I was already like really primed to read something like this. And I also was like kind of in a slump, honestly. I had just been watching a lot of TV and I couldn't really get into a lot of the books like that I was reading at the time. And I'm a mood reader too, so that's like some of it. But I picked this up, started reading it, and then did not put it down until I finished it. So I literally read it in one sitting, stayed up way too late for a weeknight. It wasn't a mistake because this book was great, but it was not a smart decision on my part. But I always appreciate like the beauty in books that pull you in like that. And I feel like it's books like that that remind us how much we like us as readers love to read when there is a book that you just cannot put down. I also went to a private Catholic school from K through 12, and there were a lot of things about this book and this setting that transported me, for better or for worse, back to that setting. And I, you know, had uniforms and everything, and I was not a Black student at this school, but I am an Asian American, and there were very few people of color. Is it, again, a PWI, predominantly white institution? And I went to a school with, just like in this book, the students K through 12 were very wealthy, came from wealthy families, predominantly white population. And just the way that Farida writes the tensions and like how this must have felt for students. And I mean, again, I can only empathize as an Asian American, not as a Black student, but yeah, it is not always a fun setting to be in. And I feel like Farida really nails some of the tension here. After I finished, I immediately Googled this book, because I knew how much I loved it, and I knew some other friends of mine, some other bookstagrammers who had recommended this book. So thank you. Thank you, Maya. I will tag her in the show notes. So I already knew it was going to be great, but I really wanted to read to like what other people thought about it. And when I Googled it, immediately a review in Marie Claire comes up called, it's titled Ace of Spades is this summer's must read YA novel, which perfect title. I totally agree. And the person who wrote this article, Danielle Prescott, interviewed Farida. And I really want to point out a piece from this review, because she so poignantly writes that this book is not simply a cautionary tale of institutionalized racism, but actually a visceral depiction of the acute danger that people of color in white spaces find to be the norm. I asked her almost immediately what she thought the relationship was between anti-Blackness and so-called prestigious institutions. That was a quote from Danielle. And the response from Farida in this interview is, I think a lot of these institutions, whether it's a university or a high school, they often are prestige because they have a history that's rooted in the kind of subjugation of Black people, she says. It's kind of interesting how they're all hiding basically what you've been doing. A lot of them have gotten their wealth and prestige from what they did in the past. So just a really interesting article. I definitely encourage you to check it out, and like I said, it should come up right when you Google it. And you know, I went on a deeper dive too, because I love this book so much, and I just want to read everything about the book and everything about what the author was saying. And there is actually a YouTube video from Farida online, and it's just a 4-minute video, so it's not very long, where she kind of talks about Ace of Spades very briefly, and she also makes book suggestions. So I wanted to throw her suggestions in here as well, and maybe some of you guys have read them and maybe not. I know that I added a couple of these to my TBR, but she talks a lot about how she really likes to write and read about both healthy and unhealthy portrayals of relationships in YA, which I read a lot of YA, and I think that's so important, because even when I was a young adult, like, how would I know what's a healthy portrayal of a relationship or an unhealthy one? And that's what I like, again, about Ace of Spades, is like she very clearly kind of writes these pieces and helps us to understand like what is healthy and what isn't healthy, and what is gaslighting, and pieces like that. So all of that being said, Farida's suggestions as far as both healthy and unhealthy relationship portrayals in YA, she suggests Simon James Green's Noah Can't Even and Noah Could Never. So definitely added that one to my TBR. I have not read it yet. She also added Heartstopper, which is a graphic novel by Alice Oseman, which I have seen this all over Bookstagram, and I have yet to read it. So I definitely need to pick that one up sooner rather than later. And if I'm recalling correctly, I think someone told me that The first few chapters are available for free online. So definitely check that out. And the one of the other suggestions Farida gives is Black Flamingo, which has also been on my TBR for a while. It's a YA book written in verse that follows Michael, a young half-Jamaican and half-Greek Cyprian, coming of age and discovering his own identity. So all that to say is this book is fantastic, and I'm really excited to see what else comes from her, especially considering this was her first book. And I really hope that you guys read this, because I loved it, and I hope that you love it as well. And I would love to hear what you guys thought about it and like what you took away from it. And if you're like me, where you just like could not put it down, because most of my other friends also could not put it down. So please say that you're with us there. I hope that you guys have a wonderful rest of your day, of your night. Make sure that you are drinking water and doing something for yourself either this week or this weekend. All right, guys, I'll talk to you guys soon.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of Feminist Book Club, the podcast. Want to be part of the club? Here's how you can join us. Obviously, subscribe to our podcast and leave a rating and review for brownie points. Follow along on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, and TikTok. All of those links are in the show notes. Sign up for our newsletter to be the first to know what our next monthly book pick is. And check out our award-winning monthly book subscription service. Oprah Magazine named it one of their favorite book boxes, and Shonda Rhimes called us one of her favorite subscription boxes in general. There are multiple membership levels for any budget, and it's an excellent way to support the show and the voices you heard today. See you in the club.
Well-read woman is a thing.